From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley took aim at Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, saying he lacks the courage to seek peace with Israel. That story now from VOA's Margaret Bashir at the UN.
Ambassador Haley's remarks at a regular Security Council meeting on the Israeli-Palestinian situation focused on the Palestinian leader. President Abbas has rejected the Trump administration's December 6 decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital and move the U.S. embassy there. He canceled a meeting this month with U.S. Vice President Mike Pence, who was in the region, and has said the U.S. can no longer be an acceptable mediator in the peace process. Haley said the United States would not chase after a Palestinian leadership lacking what is necessary to achieve peace. She added that the United States remains fully prepared and eager to pursue a peace deal. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Meantime, at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, President Trump has questioned whether peace talks between the Israelis and Palestinians will ever resume. White House has released details of a compromise framework on immigration for lawmakers to accept or reject. Immigration was a key issue among lawmakers, which resulted in last weekend's shutdown of the U.S. government. U.S. has issued sanctions on six Taliban and Haqqani Network militants as it demands more help from Pakistan to disrupt terrorist financing. The six include a former high-ranking official of Afghanistan's former Taliban government. All six have been involved in attacks on U.S.-led coalition forces smuggling and financing terrorists. This is VOA News. U.S.-Turkish relations have suffered another blow, with Ankara disputing Washington's version of a telephone call this week between the U.S. and Turkish presidents. And now from Dorian Jones in Istanbul.
Ankara has rejected Washington's account of what U.S. President Donald Trump said to his Turkish counterpart Recep Tayyip Erdogan, denying there was any call by Trump to de-escalate the military operation against the Syrian Kurdish militia, the YPG, in Syria's Afrin enclave. The White House reported Trump said the Turkish operation risks undercutting our shared goals in Syria and urged Turkey to de-escalate, limit its military actions, and avoid civilian casualties and increases to displaced persons and refugees. The dispute over the contents of the telephone call is exacerbating a lack of trust between the two NATO allies. The United States has supported the YPG militia in the war against the Islamic State. Ankara considers the YPG a terrorist organization linked to a Kurdish insurgency inside Turkey. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
U.S. civil rights groups suing the Department of Homeland Security here in Washington over its decision to end protection from deportation for thousands of Haitian immigrants. The NAACP's lawsuit alleges the decision to end what is known as temporary protective status was based on skin color and violates the constitutional right to equal protection. Haitians are granted TPS in 2010 after a 7.0 earthquake devastated what was already the Western Hemisphere's poorest country. TPS has since been extended several times because of other disasters in Haiti, including hurricanes and a cholera outbreak. A new report is showing that smoking rates among Americans at historic lows, but the U.S. still has one of the highest rates of tobacco-related deaths in the world. We get more now from VOA's Carol Pearson.
The report finds that states which offer smoking cessation programs to people with low incomes see smoking rates in this group fall. Thomas Carr, the association's director of national policy, says his organization is also calling for states to raise the age at which young adults can buy tobacco products to 21, since most people start smoking when they're still teenagers. So far, five states have done so. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Taking stock of their lives and remembering those who were lost, emotional residents trickled back to the California coastal town that was devastated 2 weeks ago by mudslides here in the U.S., left 21 dead, destroyed more than 100 homes.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, January 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gambian President Adama Barrow reflects on his first 4 years in office.
I think everybody is free in this country now. We have maintained the independence of the judiciary, the rule of law, and we have opened up Gambia. And I think that is paying dividends for this country.
First Gambian President Adama Barrow, South Sudan's ambassador to Moscow, resigns, saying he would like to work for peace in his country as a private citizen. Swazi textile workers demand wage increases and other benefits. And Zimbabwe's president promises to hold elections sometime before July this year.
This time around, we want to have free, fair, credible elections, free of violence. If you have that criteria, why would you want to deny international observers coming to our country?
The Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa speaking this week in Davos, Switzerland. And we'll have analysis of President Mnangagwa's election promise. Those stories plus Samson Omale Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Gambian President Adama Barrow says although his first year in office was challenging, he's proud that the country as a whole has made significant progress. Barrow assumed the presidency a year ago this month after defeating longtime leader Yahya Jammeh in an election. In this exclusive interview with reporter Sydney Mariner, President Barrow touted some of his government's achievements to include improvement in the economy, restoration of freedoms, and an independent judiciary. He says while there remains some challenges in the security sector, efforts are underway to reform that sector.
I think it has been a difficult period, but as a nation, we have progressed. Fundamentally, our main focus was to stabilize the economy because we inherited a bankrupt nation. It was incumbent on us to focus on the economy, and we worked very hard to stabilize the economy. I can proudly tell you that today we are about 4 months into COVID. I think that have been tremendous efforts by this government and by the financial team who worked very hard to get us to that level. Our governor of the central bank is the governor of the year in Africa. I think that is big, the state of the economy.
Apart from the economy, which area are you proud of in terms of, you know, improving the livelihood of Gambians? You promised that when you come, you will come with a change that will impact positively.
I think our records are there, the records in the area of freedom. I think everybody is free in this country now. I think that is fundamental because that is winning the confidence of everybody. We have maintained the independence of the judiciary, the rule of law, and we have opened up Gambia. And I think that is paying dividends for this country. The traffic at the Port Authority have increased because we have winning investors' confidence. If you look at the market today, some prices are now going down. Prices like flour, sugar. And we are also brave enough to reduce the tax on rice importation. And rice is our staple food. That means we are serious in reducing prices, especially basic commodities. I think that is a big achievement.
Of recent, we have seen security challenges confronting your government with incidents in both URR and, you know, West Coast region. Your Excellency, are we safe as a country?
I think we are safe. But we admit that we have some security challenges. We admit that we have some security failures. But we can always learn from those mistakes. And we are committed in reforming that sector, comprehensive reform, to build their capacity to educate the security sector so that they can improve the security status in this country. And we are working towards that, and we are committed to that.
How do you intend to fix that broken security lapses?
That's why we're talking about reforms. There was a comprehensive staff audit to be ascertained of what we have at the security sector in terms of numbers, capacity, and so forth. And also, we are trying to build up a military academy. In this military academy, we will train our military personnel so that we can increase their knowledge as far as security is concerned and also build their confidence.
Your Excellency, migration is a very, very complex and a global concern. Of recent, we have seen, despite the changes, Gambians are still trying to reach Europe through the Mediterranean. What is your government doing to stop this illegal migration to Europe? And secondly, the German president visit is in relation to migration. There have been reports that you signed a deportation agreement. This is going wild on social media. Is there any kind of agreement you signed with it?
We haven't signed any agreement with the German president. The social media, I call them lazy journalists because they don't verify. They don't try to find out. They write things that they have no correct information about. And this is not helping our situation. I've always been preaching, Gambians, all hands on deck so that we move this country. I think we need to be positive. We haven't signed nothing with the German president, and we don't even have intention of signing anything, but we rather engage in them.
That was Gambian President Adamman Barrow in an exclusive interview with reporter Seni Mariner in Banjul. We have part two of President Barrow's interview Monday morning on this program. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa has announced he will hold free, fair and credible elections sometime before July this year. Speaking this week in Davos, Switzerland, at the ongoing World Economic Forum, Mr. Mnangagwa said he will make a proclamation about the elections next month. Unlike his predecessor, Robert Mugabe, Mnangagwa said international observers would be welcome.
After the 12th of February next month, I'll be able to make a proclamation of elections. So I believe that elections will not be in July. They'll be earlier than July. This time around, Zimbabwe is open and transparent. We want to have free, fair, credible elections, free of violence. If you have that criteria, why would you want to deny international observers coming to our country? We said we abide by the results. The purpose of an election is to have the electorate select a team of persons whom they think addresses their challenges and their needs. If we lose elections, that's it. Whichever party wins the election will proceed to take the reins of power. If President Trump came here today when I'm still around, I'll be able to talk to him. I'll be able to make requests from him and say, oh, Mr. President, Zimbabwe is open for business. I know Americans like to play golf. Come and build golf courses at Victoria Falls. Bring American Airlines, Victoria Falls, build hotels. And they'll give you incentives, 5-year incentives for you to do all those things. We're open.
Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa speaking this week in Davos, Switzerland, at the ongoing World Economic Forum. A Zimbabwe political analyst says he welcomes President Mnangagwa's announcement to hold elections in Zimbabwe sometime before July this year. Shadrach Guto, professor emeritus of the University of South Africa, says such elections would be in line with the country's constitution. The only concern, Guto says, is whether the Zimbabwe government will be able to complete voter registration in time for the vote. Zimbabwe has been an isolated country during the Robert Mugabe regime. Professor Guto says many Zimbabweans welcome President Mnangagwa's desire to open the country to investors, including Zimbabweans in the diaspora.
Well, I think that is something that is important. First of all, he's trying to underline the fact that the new, if you like, regime in Zimbabwe is really trying to abide by the constitution, and therefore it is a question of building constitutionalism in Zimbabwe. The problem, I came from Zimbabwe today, and indeed people are worried that it's a very short period to convince the ordinary citizens to register to vote in Zimbabwe and so on. But I would rather that they undertake a program that's going to really to mobilize the people so that they have elections within the constitutional framework rather than undermine the constitution which will bring more crisis into Zimbabwe.
Professor, President Mnangagwa, is he doing this to say, I don't want to say appease the international community, just to lift the sanctions that have been placed on Zimbabwe during the regime of former President Mugabe? Is he doing this so that the sanctions will be lifted?
No, I think it is both. But the more important thing for Zimbabwe at the moment is really to be able to open up the economy. And in the message, it's not just holding free and fair elections in July, but really indicating that Zimbabwe is now open to investors, both Zimbabweans in diaspora to be attracted to come to Zimbabwe, the international community in terms of capital investors and so on to come to Zimbabwe. And what I felt on the ground when I was there in the last 3 days is that there's a groundswell in support of that. And if Zimbabwe's economy can begin to grow, it is something that Zimbabweans have been waiting for. And that is why they celebrated the removal or pushing aside of Robert Mugabe's autocratic rule, which was really pushing away free trade, investment, and pushed a lot of Zimbabweans out of Zimbabwe. Critically, what he also indicated is that on the question of land issues, they will pay some compensation to those who are, you know, lost their farms and so on.
Professor, you know very well as a Zimbabwean, past elections in Zimbabwe have been very questionable to the point that some people, even the opposition, has suggested that those were not free and fair. President Mnangagwa is saying that he wants to have a free, fair, credible elections that the international community, international observers are welcome.
Very important indeed, but that is also the parameters within the African Charter on Democracy and Elections are based. Secondly, I believe that it is something which is good for Zimbabwe, but also for many African countries and the world. But what I saw as a challenge in Zimbabwe, which even the local press and people are talking about, is the period between now and July this year, which is really, we are talking about 6 months, is difficult really to convince. So you need a very strong electoral management body in the country to educate people, to tell people come out to register, vote, so that we don't have just a small section of the population participating in the elections. So that is dealing with questions of governance. But importantly, on the other side is the question of opening up the economy. The two go together, and that is where we are. And we really hope that Zimbabwe will try to combine the two and go through a transitional period of at least a few years after the July elections. But I'm happy that President at the moment, Emmerson Mnangagwa, and the regime that is, or rather the administration that is in power at the moment, is pushing in that direction.
Shadrack Gutto is Professor Emeritus of the University of South Africa. You're speaking with me from Pretoria, South Africa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, January 26th. South Sudan's ambassador to the Russian Federation has resigned. Tela Ring Deng tendered his resignation on Thursday in a letter to President Salva Kiir. In an exclusive interview with VOA's South Sudan in Focus program, Ring confirmed he quit his job. He declined to give reasons for his resignation, saying only he would like to work for peace in South Sudan as a private citizen.
The reasons that I have resigned is not the subject matter. The subject matter is that I have resigned as ambassador representing South Sudan in Moscow.
Is your resignation connected to the letter from the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Deng Alor, asking you to report to Juba within 72 hours?
To be recalled to go to headquarters for consultation is not a sufficient reason for one to resign. In actual fact, I've been speculating resign for some time now, and I just decided to submit in my resignation. As a matter of fact, I got the letter from the headquarters after I've sent my letter of resignation. So the two are not interrelated.
Ambassador Tirar, South Sudan needs you and needs your contribution at this crucial moment. Why would you turn your back to your country?
No, I will not turn my back to my country. I will utilize my talents in other areas as a private citizen.
What are these other areas?
Well, I will work towards peace for our people. Our people have suffered for the last 4 years, and they have been suffering for centuries. There are people who speculate that once I resign, I will jump the fence and work against peace. It's not my interest. I will participate in peace building as a private citizen.
Before your appointment to Russia, people have been saying you are the right-hand man of President Salva Kiir. Did you discuss with him your resignation before you issued this letter?
No, I did not discuss it with him, and I still remain as a friend to President Salva. We have been friends for a long time, since 1994, and we will still continue as friends. The fact that I was pulled out being an ambassador in Russia doesn't destroy our personal relationship with the President Kiir.
But your decision to pull out looks like a slap on his face.
Not necessarily. As long as I'm a South Sudanese citizen, I can come to Juba anytime and participate in whatever capacity as a private citizen. As a South Sudanese, we all want a peaceful resolution to the current conflict.
South Sudanese envoys around the world have been going through tough time. I mean, the ones in Washington here have not been paid. How was the situation with your staff in Russia?
No, it is all over. We have not been paid until January. We will be 10 months. We have been paid January, February, March. But that's not the reason of my resignation from my post in Moscow.
But that post is a big post. I mean, you are representing a country. For you to step down, it sends a message. What kind of message are you trying to send out?
I will still continue to advocate for peace as a private citizen. It is my desire for us as South Sudanese to come together, forget about the past, sit on the table, negotiate in good faith, so that our people don't suffer longer than they had already been.
Are you going to join hands with those who have already started the negotiations in Addis Ababa?
No, I will not join hands with them because the participants have already been decided upon. And I will lobby on my personal capacity as a citizen.
Wanda Nkonza is the... That's Ambassador Tilar Ring Deng, South Sudan's former ambassador to Russia. He was speaking to John Tanza of the South Sudan in Focus program. You can hear the full version of the ambassador's interview at 16:30 UTC today on South Sudan in Focus program. The Amalgamated Trade Union of Swaziland, known as ATUSWA, is demanding wage increases for textile workers in the Southern African Kingdom. Currently, most textile workers are reportedly paid about $135 per month, but the workers' group is proposing that the basic minimum wage should be increased from $135 to $169 per month. Wanda Nkonza, ATUSWA Secretary General, tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the textile workers have been complaining for a long while about low wages and other issues.
Let us dramatically improve the minimum conditions, but also embark in a process of formulating a joint negotiation council where the union representing the workers and the employers representative bodies will sit down and discuss further terms and conditions of employment apart from the minimum conditions or apart from the wages component. And at this point in time, the workers in Swaziland, the median wage is $135. And we have put a proposal that, for a start, the employers must agree to improve from $135 to $169.
Wonder when ATUSWA presented that proposal to the owners of these companies, what were their reactions?
We have not seen the reaction as yet because there is a first meeting happening on Wednesday, the 31st of January. That is where we will get the first reaction. But today we're having a meeting with one of the employers. The reaction is that, yes, It might be possible. However, we are bound to have a resistance from some of these employers. And we are aware who are those.
The danger, some Swazis say, is that they could increase the wages as Atuswa is proposing. However, they could let a lot of people go. What is your reaction to that?
Really, there's no science to prove that. We are saying that employers should not just make their allegations and protect themselves, protect their profit. If that is true, the employers will not hide information from the union. The mere fact that the companies don't want to divulge information leads us to then assume that there is money, because as employees of these companies, we are seeing major development.
Wanda Mkonza is the General Secretary for the Amalgamated Trade Union of Swaziland. She spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the commercial capital, Mazini. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the 2018 Championship of African Nations, CHAN, where fixtures for the quarterfinal rounds have been completed following the conclusion of the group stage matches. On Saturday, host Morocco will face Namibia at the Stade Mohammed V, while Sudan and Zambia will engage in the late kick-off. The other set of quarterfinal games will be played on Sunday as Nigeria play Angola at the Ibn Battuta Stadium and Congo Republic will face Libya. In the meantime, organizers of the 2018 African Nations Championship have called for Algeria Football Federation President Keredine Zetchi to be suspended from CAF for 2 years. Their call for his suspension came after the Algeria Football Federation President allegedly withdrew from his duties at the 2018 CHAN, where he was assigned to the Marrakech venue without any notice given to the organizing committee. Mr. Zetchi's resignation from his CHAN duties followed a rejection of his appeals to have the CAF executive board to integrate FAF vice president Bachir Ould Zimri, despite the deadline for such an action having long since lapsed. Staying with football news, Botswana will not host the 2018 COSAFA Regional Cup due to budget constraints. Botswana Football Association Chief Executive Officer Mfolo Mfolo said the expectation was for COSAFA to take care of the entire budget, but because of the economic meltdown currently affecting the world, COSAFA felt the burden of taking care of all the costs will be too much for them to bear. And in female football news, the Nigerian Football Federation has signed an agreement with top Swedish football coach Thomas Denneby to take the role of head coach of 8-time African female football champions, the Super Falcons of Nigeria. The contract also enables Denneby to come into the job with an assistant, Mr. Jorgen Pettersson, another highly experienced Swedish coach nominated by Denneby himself. Away from football news, Egypt have defeated Morocco to reach the final of the 2018 African Men's Handball Championship currently going on in Gabon. The Egyptian team enjoyed a comfortable 31-19 victory on Thursday over the Atlas Lions in the semi-final match. We saw Egypt's Mohamed Mouadoua Hacham named man of the match. Egypt will now compete in the final on Saturday against Tunisia, who earned an easy 34-14 victory over Angola in the other semi-final fixture. This will be a repeat of the 2016 final, which saw Egypt clinch the title after a hard-fought 21-19 win over the North African rivals. In basketball news, Cote d'Ivoire has announced a 17-man preliminary squad for next month's FIBA Basketball World Cup 2019 Africa qualifiers in Maputo, Mozambique. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, January 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. Oh, join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.